said this starts out with a mix of testing, of making a eulogy at a funeral. Avraham Avinu comes to mourn and to eulogize Sarah, and also it alludes to the mitzvah of mourning, of Avelus. And in the end of the Seder, we also have an allusion to the mitzvah of Nichum Avelus, of comforting the mourners, insofar as the Medrash of the Gemara in Sota, Yudalit, says that God also comforts the mourners. Where do we find that? That after Avraham Avinu died, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Yitzchak and blessed him. And the Gemara says, Berachot Birchas Avelus, he blessed him with the blessing that he gave to mourners. So he comforted the mourners, and therefore we have the whole gamut of mourning, the eulogy, the mourning, and the comforting of the mourners in this week's Seder. In addition, we have the other end of the spectrum, and that is marriage. We have the marriage of Yitzchak, and the bracha that you make by marriage is hinted to in the Seder, and we find also a connection between marriage and mourning in the Seder, insofar as marriage and the comfort from mourning, insofar that Yitzchak Avinu is comforted when he marries Rivka and brings her, and she takes the place of his mother and is comforted after the death of his mother. So we have marriage being a comfort in mourning. There are many things where we find the very parallels between mourning and weddings. Okay, some people will say that that's no surprise, but that's not the what I'm getting at. That there's the two sides of life, the joy of a wedding and the sorrow at somebody's passing. We see that there are similarities. We find that there are brachas you make, birchas chasanim, and there's birchas aveilim, and in the same place of the Gemara, discusses the two kinds of brachas, and there are very much similarities. How many people you need, and if the chasan and the avil is part of the minyan or not. Also, we find another thing, a similarity, a parallel. In order to make these brachas, the brachas of aveilim, for the most part, we don't make them. There's a custom, there's only a voluntary thing, whatever reason we don't do it. But when they did do it, so they did it all 7 days, if there were new people there who hadn't been to the funeral. Just like at a wedding, you make the brachas all 7 days, if there's somebody new who wasn't at the wedding. Chon and Chadosh. We find also, very simply, there are 7 days of Sheva brachas and 7 days of Shiva, of mourning. We also find that in those 7 days, there's parallels. The first day is the most intense happiness and mourning. The next 3 days are a lesser point, till the end of seven. Then there's halachas that deal with 30 days and the full year that apply both to mourning and to a chasan and kalim. Through the first year, they're still considered a chasan and kalim. Some halachas apply even through the first year. Another source where there's a connection between marriage and mourning is a Gemara in Brachas, which on the surface is a very difficult Gemara. The Gemara says that at a wedding of one of the Amoraim, so they asked one of the Amoraim to sing something in honor of the Chasan and Kalah, to fulfill the mitzvah of making the Chasan and Kalah happy. And his song went something like this: "Vay London Ishman, they were all going to die." And the chorus was, "And what should we do? Prepare yourselves with Torah and mitzvahs," or whatever. That was the song that he sang in honor of the Chasan and Kalah. Obviously, there's a tremendous connection between mourning and weddings, right? And there's got to be some explanation why he chose to sing this song, which we will explain. Another connection is that the Gemara learns and explains the sentence, that at the time of finding, everyone should daven for the time of finding. So the Gemara learns this sentence to deal with marriage. Time you find the woman, matza isha, matza tov. So eis mitzol is the time of finding your mate. And also, the Eish Mitzvah was a time of death. There's a connection between death and marriage again. What's the connection? What's the idea behind these two mitzvahs? The mitzvah of Mitzameh Achos Mitzvahla and the Nachem Aveilu. Let's start with explaining the idea behind both of these and see the tremendous connection between them. The idea of marriage is the idea of perfecting, completing, completion. Okay? That a person should realize that he is not complete and needs someone else to complete him. The way the world was created is that God intended to create two separate human beings, one male and one female, but he created them together to begin with and then separated. That's what the Gemara says. The original human being was a combination male and female. He wasn't a man, male. Adam HaRishon was both male and female. He was a Siamese twin. The front half was male, the back half was female. The two parts of being. There was a body with a face, male side, male characteristic, body with a face, back to back, female characteristic. That was the first man. And said, "Vayikare shmom adam yom yibarem." God called their name man on the day he created them. So the first man was not the male. It was male, female together. And then God separated them, took off one side and made a separate female, separate male. And now she was an ezer kenegdo. Until now she could never face him, because they were back to back. Now she was a helpmate kenegdo at the kitchen. The fact is that tsela, since he took the tsela, tsela doesn't necessarily mean a rib. Tsela means a side. Because we see by the Mishkan, it says, well, the tsela ha-mishkan, the Mishkan had no ribs. It had sides. So this side of the Mishkan, that side, the word tsela can mean side. And according to this, God took one side away and made that into woman. Now why did God make man together and then separate them? He intended to separate them when he just created them separate. So Rashi says, "On lo tov hayosa adam levado." It's not good for man to be alone, meaning alone, complete in one body. Because then there's a danger that he would think he's a god. There's one god above, there's one god below. Meaning, a god by definition means something complete. Doesn't need anything else to complete. If man would be complete within himself, he could reproduce within himself and take care of all his needs within himself, he could think he's a god. So therefore, God created human beings as one unit, male and female, and then separated them in half. And then each half knows they're only half. And they need another half to complete them on all levels. Just on a simple physical level, reproduction, and emotionally, academically, intellectually, every level, male and female are different, and in order to be complete, you need both sides. So in that way, God made it clear that since we started off together, and that was separated, each of us is only a half. And without that other side to complete you, you're not a complete person. And therefore, you know you're not a god. So that's why, yeah. Good question. It's because, and I don't want to go into it now, but because the different roles of what the male was supposed to do and the female is more the support role. And in a movie, you have the supporting actor and actress and the star. Okay? I'm not saying the male is the star, but there's a supporting role, and then there's the main role, but there's the other role. Okay? Both are necessary. Both are necessary. So the role of the woman is more to be a support, right? But sometimes the support is more important than the main role. But that has to do with the roles of these two. Okay. In any case, that's why marriage is called Metzia. Because a Metzia means you find something that you lost. So if a person was created complete, and that half was taken away, finding the other half is finding what you lost. And that's why it revolves around the number 7. because the number seven represents perfection. 7 days of creation is the completeness of this world. So anything that revolves around the cycle of seven is a complete cycle, completeness, perfection is represented by seven. That's why by 11 you dance in a circle. Circle also represents perfection, completeness. And also dancing is picking up your feet. The feet represent the physical side of man. Picking them up represents that you're elevating towards the spiritual, and that unites everything. The physical world is separate. Everything is separate in the physical world. As you get more and more spiritual, everything becomes more united. So dancing represents that unity, completion of the circle, and reaching towards more spiritual things which represent unity. And that's why the Kala goes around the Chasam 7 times, because she completes it. Some say it's like the, what's it called, conquering of Jericho, when the walls fell down. They went around 7 times, but that's not the real reason. Because the Kala completes the Chasam, goes around him 7 times to represent that perfection, that completion. We also find another idea of perfection by the wedding. So anybody who makes the Chasam and Kala happy, right, makes them rejoice and makes their bond. What's the idea of making them rejoice? They should feel more comfortable with each other. They should be happy with each other, and therefore they're more bonded to each other. So the one who bonds the Chasam and Kala together is like he built one of the destroyed places in Yerushalayim. Life. Some say one of these destroyed places in Beit HaMikdash, because that represents the perfection of the Jewish people. That the perfection of any Jew is part of the perfection of the Jewish people. And that's why Shalom Bayis is the idea of husband and wife. That's where God's presence is. And that's where the Shalom is. Peace and harmony in the world between husband and wife. That's the concept of Shalom. Shlemus and Shalom, perfection and peace, harmony, go all together. Oh, that's the side of marriage. What about the side of mourning? It's the opposite. Mourning is a loss and the imperfection. Something's missing, right? The situation that existed is now hampered. There's a loss, and because there's a loss, things are imperfect. They're not the way that they were. What is mourning for? One is for the imperfection of man. A person dies, he no longer can perfect himself in this world. This is a world of action. This is a world where you can perfect yourself more and more, do more and more mitzvahs, become a better and better person, and whatever you do here affects what you're going to have in the world to come. But once you leave this world, so you can't perfect yourself anymore. So we cry for the person who is no longer able to perfect himself. So mourning is for imperfection, the imperfection of the person who died. And then there's another idea of mourning. Mourning for the fact that my relative is no longer with me, and I feel imperfect because with that relative there is a certain amount of camaraderie, a certain amount that they did for me, whether it's a parent or a spouse or a child or a brother or a sister, right? And now that relationship is missing. So I'm missing something. There's a loss. So that's another kind of mourning. Then there's the mourning for the, what's it called, the mourning for what I'm missing that person, and also what I'm losing because that person isn't here. I miss that person, and I miss the interaction with that person. And that's why mourning is represented by crying, right? Because crying is an expression of loss. You cry when you feel you've lost something. You're missing something. That's what tears are. Tears are, you lose part of your neshama. Tears are like the sweat of the soul, they say. Who said that? Long said, well, somebody said that. So the idea is that you cry, you're giving off part of your essence. Crying and tears are an expression of loss. And that's why the Hesped is important. Hesped is either an honor for the dead, you recount the praises of the person who died, or it's also an honor of the living. that the living recognize who they had. But the purpose of the Hesed is to recognize the Hesed. The same letter, Hesed and Hesed, right? Lost and Hesed. Why? Because before you can realize what you lost, you have to really remember what you had. So the Hesed reminds you of what was, and now you can really appreciate what you lost. And the difference between Hesed and Hesed is, in Hesed, the Sabbath comes before the pay. The Sabbath comes before the mouth. And in Hesed, the Tzedakah comes before the Sabbath. The idea being the following. When you say a Hesed, you first remember the Sabbath, what was. Sabbath means to support. What was there, positive. Or Sabbath can also mean what was nearby. Samuch. So first you remember the past, and then you can open your mouth in mourning. And what's the purpose of the Hesed? To recognize the loss. After you said the Hesed, now you can recognize the loss. What's the purpose of recognizing the loss? That you will feel the need to try to make up for it and to go on and protect yourself and go on with your life. The purpose of the feeling of the loss is not to feel lost and to give up hope and to feel abandoned, but to give you the incentive to want to make up that loss as much as you can and reach towards more perfection, because you are now made aware of how imperfect and how much you're missing. So now you want to find other ways of making up for that loss. So after, that's why it says Avraham Avinu came to eulogize Sarah and then to cry for her. Because before he could verbalize what it is he lost, he couldn't feel the loss. He could feel it, but it wasn't really complete. So first you say to Hesed, and you recount what it is you had, and then you can appreciate what you don't have now. Because if you don't appreciate what you had, you can't appreciate that you lost anything. So first comes the Hesed, then comes the crying. Because any crying that comes before that is not really appreciated, it's not really intense. And that's why Chazal say, whoever cries for a kosher Jew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts the tears and puts them in his treasure house. Meaning that if you feel a loss at the interaction between people in this world, and any kosher Jew affects me, makes me a better person, because we all interact with each other. And when a kosher Jew dies, I feel a loss. I feel something's taken away from me. I feel that imperfection in myself. So the tears themselves, right, are something that give me the incentive to want to then make up for that loss, make up for that imperfection, and protect myself. So the tears themselves are something of value that God counts, puts in his treasure house. And what's in God's treasure house? Yerushalayim, fear of heaven, because that's what feeling a loss should bring a person to, the need to make up for that loss, and if you feel imperfect, to try and protect yourself more. That's why by death, instead of dancing in a circle, right, even though many of you are shalim, they dance around the grave in a circle, but really what's mentioned in the Gemara, what you do by death, is mekonimah. They hired women who were mourners. And each one individually, separate, mourns. And how do you do it? You don't do it with a dance. They used to bang on their chest or kick down with their feet and or clap their hands together. What's the symbolism? He said the symbolism of dancing in a circle is a unit of perfection, and everybody's lifting their feet, which represents the physical side, upward towards spiritual. Here's just the opposite. You're kicking down with your feet, taking your hands, which represent the spiritual handiwork. The work of our hands, which is something that creates spiritual things in this world. You're knocking down to your body, bringing it down. Instead of lifting up your feet, you're knocking down your hands or knocking down your feet, right, as a sign of mourning. Now the mitzvah, so therefore we find that the two poles, the idea of mourning is to recognize imperfection and loss, and the idea of net wedding is to recognize perfection and completeness. Now it's the opposite ends of the spectrum, but we see the purpose of them is the same. Now the mitzvah to make a chassan and kala happy, which is the mitzvah on the side of marriage, right, is that by recognizing perfection of this couple, I recognize that without that perfection, I'm imperfect. And one needs to perfect himself. By recognizing the fact that two human beings have to get together to be perfect, every individual human being recognizes it as imperfect. So the involvement in a wedding reminds you of your imperfection through the happiness of one aspect of perfection, which is marriage. And therefore, it gives the person an incentive to want to make himself more perfect, recognizing that human beings, by their very nature, are imperfect and need other things to perfect. And therefore, the more that we recognize how imperfect we are, the happier we can be when we reach some level of perfection. So the fact that a person's going to die, and he is limited, and he can't continue himself on his own, and he needs to get married to make a posterity, right? And also he needs other people to be masculine him. At the wedding, that which will make the husband and kala happy is recognizing how limited they are without being married, and how much the marriage creates perfection. Perfection for the future. Now they have something that will give them a chance to break the limits of death. They'll transcend death by having children who will live on after them, and where they transcend their own imperfection and being limited by extending themselves out to another person. So the way to make the chassan and kala appreciate more their new status is to mark for them and to say, right, we are very limited people. We are limited by death and with everything that that represents. And therefore, be happy if you can reach a certain amount of perfection. So if you take it the right way, it makes the marriage more significant and makes the chassan and kala more happy to hear a reminder that human beings are very imperfect and very limited. And therefore, what is the opposite? How do you comfort more? So that's making the chassan and kala happy, but to a certain degree, reminding them of their imperfection so they can appreciate their perfection. How do you menachem Avel? The Avel is very aware of his imperfection. He's lost. So how do you comfort him? So here you want to comfort him by giving him a reason to go on, to not to give up, not to feel abandoned, right? But to feel that if he's at loss and he's imperfect, that he has the opportunity to do things that will protect him and make up for the loss at least as best he can according to the circumstances. Not going to bring the relative back, but he'll be able to go on with his life and make up for that which is missing in other ways. So therefore, it says that the purpose of comforting the mourners are a few. One is to take away his sorrow, his anger, right? His sadness. At his sack, his discomfort, suffering, right, at the loss. And to try to turn it around to something to be used in a positive way, to go on with life and to make up for the loss in a positive way. Another thing is to give him a bracha. Bracha means to increase. To give him the desire and the incentive that now he feels at loss to want to increase himself to help and compensate for that loss. Another purpose of Nichma Velen is that he should accept that this is God's will. He shouldn't be angry that this is something that's totally negative, but it's God's will, and that he has to look at it in a positive way and deal with it in a positive way. Therefore, we find in the Medrash that this concept, that after Avraham Avinu died, Yitzchak Avinu said, "Oily Shema Endi Maisim Tovim. I feel totally at loss. Maybe I don't have any good deeds anymore that like my father did, And what am I going to do? How am I going to find favor in God's eyes? He felt that loss so great, not having his father around, that he felt inadequate. So how did God comfort him? Told him, look, even though your father's no longer here, that you can make up for that. You can be the person now who will be like your father. You can walk in his way. You can compensate for what was lost when your father was gone. So he gave him a bracha. God came and he said, don't worry. I'm going to be with you. I'll bless you. Right? And I'll multiply your seed. You will be able to compensate for what was lost by your father's death. And therefore, we find that Nichum Aveilim is almost the opposite of Simchas Chasam B'Kala. By Chasam B'Kala, we try, in the time when they are appreciating their perfection, to remind them of what imperfection is, so they can appreciate the perfection. By Avil, when the time is that you are aware of your imperfection and your loss, we try to remind you that you can perfect yourself. There can be, what's it called, the perfection in the future. And therefore, mourning also goes around the number seven, because it also has to do with perfection. It's to give you the incentive to want to go on and perfect yourself by recognizing how imperfect you are now. Wedding is, we want you to be happy with your perfection by recognizing what imperfection could have been. And that's what when they said these brachas of Birkas Aveilim, okay, what was the content? So the first bracha was to praise God, Chai Hamis, that there's hope, there's only a temporary state, but eventually God will perfect the world, bring the dead back to life, so there's hope. That's Shevach HaBerubom. Then there was a bracha to Negev HaAveil, right, to be older than to choose them, to let them know that their situation is not different than anybody else in the world, everybody goes through this, and they should use it in a positive way to repent and to protect themselves more. Then there was a bracha for the people who came to fulfill the mitzvah of comforting the mourners, and that they should get their reward in trying to perfect and help someone reach perfection and not get bogged down in his loss, but use it in a positive way. And then there was a Makoshes Rachamim, the last bracha, was asking for mercy on the Jewish people, that God should take away all the imperfections, that all the tzaras that Jewish people have, and comfort us and bring us to perfection. So they all revolve around the same idea. And that's why death is also called a time of finding. Because marriage, you recognize by what you found perfection, what you were imperfect before, that you had lost something. And by mourning, through the loss, you are have an incentive to find other means of making up for that loss. And that's why by Avelis, there is no shalom. You don't say hello, you don't say shalom to a mourner, and there's no shchina, you can't learn Torah, and you say, I'm walking, you're not going to spend it, so shara, that it's in the shore, and by a wedding, we're building the Beit HaMikdash, and here we're remembering the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, because Avelis is lost, so you start with the loss to get to the positive building, and by wedding, you start with the building to appreciate how imperfect you are. In any case, therefore, both by Achasuna and by Avelis is an idea of Tanin Kadosha. Because perfection is not something that a person can reach on his own. You need interaction between people. So the more that you recognize you need other people, the more this concept of perfection is brought about. And both sides, both in the side of recognizing the imperfection without those other people, or from recognizing how much you need the other people, how much you're imperfect without them, and the chasana, recognizing the fact that by having other people interact with you, right, especially husband and wife, and even friends, you need more and more protection. That's why Chazal say, the Pasuk say, Tov l'lekes l'beisha avel, l'lekes l'beisha mishpat. Both of these experiences, both of these mitzvahs, are to spur a person to recognize his imperfection and to seek perfection. Which one is more in the long run, right? Which one's more potent? Is it easier to be inspired to perfect your imperfection by going and witnessing somebody else's perfection, and from that understanding the simcha of perfection and coming to the realization that you should then perfect yourself also? Or is it easier to go and see somebody else's loss and imperfection and be spurred on from that to seek to perfect yourself, knowing that human beings are imperfect? So the Shlomo HaMelech tells us people are more inspired and more shaken up by going to a Beis Avel and getting that lesson, and going to a chasna and getting the lesson. By the chasna, you get lost in the smorgasbord, right? Or the Viennese table over here, and get lost completely. And at the morning, it hits you more between the eyes. So Tov, what is the better result of getting this message, which you get the same message from the chasna and from the avelus, where is it more potent? Go to the Beis Avel rather than going to the chasna. We should be able to recognize our imperfection without having to see it in negative ways, and the Rabban Shem should help us to alleviate all our losses and our imperfections, and build the Beis HaMikdash and bring the Shia, which is the ultimate matter.